start with you, Steve.
My name is Steve Albright. I am the co-chair and author of the Performing Open Space Committee.
Todd Rudiani, co-chair of Mobility and Connectivity.
Summer Gill.
I'm Ruth Reed, member of the team.
I am Clark Yandel, and I am a co-chair of Connectivity and Mobility.
I'm Gilbert Martinez. I'm also a member of the leadership team.
Tara Michelle, member of the team.
Nancy Letty, member of the team.
Okay, I think that's it. Thank you. We're going to start with the video now. We're going to present to you a video that was produced by the leadership committee.
I'm chairman of the leadership group for the Ocala 2035 vision. What the leadership group is supposed to do is to act as the liaison between the consultants and city staff and council in making recommendations for our 2035 vision plan. It's very important that we get all of your support, all of your comments on how you want to see our city in 25 years. This is a vital time in our community planning, so we need your input, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Sonny, can you turn it up?
Honestly, I always was afraid when Ocala started getting bigger and bigger. I don't really like the big city feel. I never have. That was one of the appeals to Ocala for me.
That's as loud as it goes.
I think, you know, if it's available in the near future and if God's with it, hey, we can increase it and have more buses.
To the sidewalks, storefronts are walkable, the sidewalks are wider, and it's just, I think that's just better for people health-wise and for the city as a whole because more people are getting out and doing things and being able to go to the sewers easily.
Parks and Rec Master Plan is extremely important for the future Ocala 2035 vision. In 30 years, we want our city to be a desirable place to live, and we want its residents to be healthy. Parks plan is going to be a great indicator of how we can accomplish it.
Transit. So, do you like coming to parks? Are parks fun?
By finding us on Facebook or Ocala2035vision.org. Thank you.
Frank, I'm going to go through the agenda that you should have in front of you. The agenda, you know, we'll go through the line of vision, history, and education, public participation. What is the recommended 2025 vision, recommended implementation strategies, and obviously next steps. In the visioning summary, the leadership group staff and the consultants have worked hard to create a vision for 2035. What you're presenting today is a compilation of all that has taken place over the past several months. And we'll start with the vision. We started with the following vision statement: to create an avenue of approach fueled by a unified community vision that provides a path to enhance Ocala's quality of life. That's what we started with. Obviously, it's not 100% at this time. It will be finalized once council has had the opportunity to review what is presented today. It'll be revised so that it is to the point and will serve as a guide for future goals of this wonderful city. Obviously, we need a statement to get started with in order to execute priorities needed to ultimately get to the vision goal. The vision statement is the guide for how we want the city to look in the future, how people get around, how are streets designed, how do buildings interact with streets and pedestrians, how are parks and open space interconnected. This vision will provide the foundation for new code and comp plan changes. It will allow for identifying areas of the city for redevelopment, mixed use, parks and recreation, and design guidelines. All of these things can be tied together to enhance the quality of life in the city of Ocala. Okay, what is the leadership group? I can say that this group is made up of 18 people from all different walks of life. I was pleased that I only recognized a few of my fellow leadership members at the first meeting. Now I consider them as my friends and grateful to have experienced this vision with them. We met regularly for meetings and we all had one goal. How can we make the city a better place for not only us, but for future generations to come? Yes, we did have different opinions from members of the leadership group and the general public. But all in all, the general consensus was the same. We want the city of Ocala to be a great place to live and prosper. All comments and suggestions, whether positive or negative, were taken into consideration in the visioning process. I personally sent out emails to all of my contacts and asked for feedback and input on how we would like the city to look in 25 years. I was also personally excited to get involved with the vision for a number of reasons. When I was contacted by staff, I was compelled to be a part of this exciting venture. I'm a professional engineer and I have experience with land development, zoning, and land use hearings, as well as permitting residential and commercial projects within the city. The proposed vision would remove some of the barriers and allow for creative design to promote growth, prosperity, connectivity, and a sense of community within the city. I've lived in Marion County for 25 years and have many fond memories of this beautiful area. I'm interested in the future of Ocala. I want Ocala to be a place where my kids can grow up and have a desire to stay and call Ocala their home. Okay, now we'll get into the history and education portion. You're going to see a few slides here of how things were done back in the 1900s. How things have evolved today's times. We educated citizens on how things were done in the early 1900s versus how they're done today, such as roadway and building trends. We can all learn from the past to create a better future for the citizens of this city. Please keep in mind we are not the first city to go through this process. So here we have a slide of the intersection of Broadway. On Broadway back in the 50s. You can see where the buildings were close to the road, and now this is 2 years later where you can see where the roads have been widened. Some buildings in the distances have been set back off the road. Next slide is what it looks like today. You can kind of see what the transportation has done and how we move people throughout and how it affects building trends and landscaping and such. This is looking north at Adams Street, which is second by the courthouse, if I'm not mistaken. I was in the 50s. 2 years later, that's what it looked like. So you can see the differences in, you know, a couple of cars going through that four-lane road. And that's what it looks like today. Okay, what are other communities doing? What has changed through the years? In the past, people were stacked on top of each other, which led to air and waterborne diseases. As a result of that, people started to get spread out. The automobile was invented, and it was a luxury to drive to destinations. The Federal Highway Act and Housing Authority was established to promote growth and job stability. Then what happened? This contributed to urban sprawl. Now, we have vaccines to eliminate the widespread disease, but what we've done in turn, by virtue of urban sprawl, has created another animal, obesity and heart disease, because people are not walking to their destinations anymore. It is so convenient to hop in a car and drive down the road to do your daily routines. We need to promote walking and exercise within the city, and this vision will offer that. So now we're going to go through some slides of what happened in San Jose. This is an area of the town, and what year is this one? 1975. So they had a visioning process, and that's what it looks like today. You can see the museum, everything's kind of pushed up against the road. You've got walkability, landscaping, much better than what was done in the past. And this is San Fernando Street, and you can see a really big difference here. You see they put in a trail line, landscaping, buildings up against the streets, make it walkable for pedestrians. And this is a Baldwin Park, Orlando, the military base, is that correct? This is before demolition. And this is after the fact. You can see from the slide, you've got the village center, mixed use around that village center, and it's offices and grocery, and then you've got the residential right on the other side of that, so people can get out of their front door and walk to their, do their daily routine, shopping, work, whatever, recreation. And these are some of the pictures that were taken in Baldwin Park. And I think these are good slides to look at, because I do believe that we can mimic this in a way that our city could benefit from these examples. Okay, now we'll move on to what are the building blocks of a great community. Three main categories targeted were mobility and community connectivity, urban form and open space, and building and site design. In mobility and community connectivity, how we connect people via all modes of transportation, streets, sidewalks, bike paths, automobile, transit, etc., and allowing for the interconnectivity of parks throughout. How great would it be to venture out on a Saturday with the family, take a stroll through the park, eat a fantastic lunch, and shop for your daily or weekly necessities all within walking distance? On urban form and open space, where do we identify areas in the city for high-intensity to low-intensity type development and also allow for open space and parks to serve these areas? I had to train myself to think about intensity and not density. For example, a super Walmart can be considered low intensity, where it would be considered as high density under land use slash zoning criteria. It is all based on how buildings interact with the roadway and setbacks. I must say that as a kid growing up in Long Island, New York, I could walk to school, the grocery store, and the park within 10 minutes or so. We knew who our neighbors were, and we felt safe. In current times, people do not even know who their neighbors are, and hopefully we can restore that sense of safety in our neighborhoods, parks, and throughout the city with this new vision. And then we get into building and site design, how buildings and sites should be based in relation to the road and surrounding area, how these buildings and sites interact with open space and recreational facilities. With the barriers removed from the code, such as building heights and setbacks, the developer, designer, planner can get creative to provide a beneficial development to the immediate user and to the rest of the community. And now at this point, I'd like to turn it over to my federal leadership committee members, Ruth Reed, Summer Gills. They will discuss the public participation aspect of the visioning process. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. President, members of the City Council, I enjoy learning about the new operations of the city, working with city staff, department heads, and consultants of VHB, Miller & Seller, Rick, Kurt, and Ray. They have given us a great opportunity to show how our city can be enhanced in the future generation. Our consultants have taken their time to explain the leadership responsibilities step by step. During our working designs with the city staff has graciously nudged us along to explore ways and avenues of thinking, not to do away with the old, but how to enhance it and improve with positive points and denote negatives. We have had great leadership meetings, 8 in fact, and have had the pleasure of sitting next to architects and engineers and folks I never would have had an opportunity to sit by or to know without being chosen to be on this leadership committee. We have shared common interests and brought issues to the table, which have long been overdue for discussion and visioning. It is with a great expectation that this leadership committee will stay together and strengthen this vision from the east, the west, the north, and the southern parts of Ocala. We want to stay intact and continue to guide the vision of 2035 as long as we are mentally and physically able to do so. My portion to this morning is to discuss public participation. To receive public participation was very important to this committee. As you noted in the vision statement, unified community visioning. We can't do anything unless our community is behind us. With that thought in mind, we wanted to bring our visioning to all parts of the city and to look at our city for the future, for a brighter future for young families that will be here, businesses, entrepreneurs, and in our community as a whole to bring brightness to our community. Therefore, 3 public workshops were held to receive community input. 2 were held on the same day of June 8th. The first, Lillian Bryant Recreational Center, and the second, the Institute of HMI. Attendance was not as great as we had expected, yet many flyers had been circulated throughout the downtown area, West Ocala, and other areas of our leadership group. We had approximately 60 people in attendance. Our professional consultants and leadership chairs were there to work, and these 3 important groups, mobility and connectivity, urban form and open space, building and site design. We wanted to share our ideas with the participants in all 3 of these groups. Our leadership team headed these various groups, and they gathered information from the participants and obtained their ideas and their issues along with ours in the workshops. It was a delight to see how the citizens came in excited and were eager to find their issues and place a dot by it, indicating their priority. Participants identified and prioritized key community issues to be addressed in the vision. As you will note, the community issues. There is a lack of high density, mixed use development in the city. Improved visual characteristics of entry quarters, which were 2740, 200, and 441. Roadways from physical barriers that divided the city, namely Pine Street, 441. Regulatory barriers existed, codes and regulations prevent flexibility in design. The city needs architectural standards, including downtown. With such powerful priority issues, the city staff and leadership wanted to carry these 3 basic themes of mobility and connectivity, urban form and open space, building and site design to more of community to receive their interactions and involvement. So 2 more design conferences were set up and held August 6th on Friday and August 7th on Saturday morning. Our consultants, VHB Miller Seller, opened with a great introduction and gave an overview of the purpose for being there in our Vision 2035. The expectation of the three modalities that followed the participants, that they would attend and have interaction and enjoy the activities. We also showed a film about Copenhagen, the pedestrian mode of transportation, as compared to our automobile transportation and mode of traveling, and how it could enhance the health and bring people together for enjoyment, entertainment, and businesses to common areas. On these two design conference days, many participants went to their interaction workshops on mobility and connectivity, urban form, and open space, building and design, and site design. The leadership group facilitated interactive exercise to educate, field questions, and obtain public feedback. Our consultants and city staff were there to guide and send in effective message and ask questions to the participants that these workshop ideas were there to obtain and value every idea that individuals brought forth to build a better Ocala with Vision 2035. I shall now turn it over to Summer Gill, a professional emerging leader in Ocala, to give social media and other ways of obtaining public participation. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Summer. We basically went out and talked to a lot of different groups, and we did focus groups, and I think the thing that came out of that I thought was really interesting was we were in the middle of a design conference, somebody said, I think it's really important that you talk to younger people because they're the ones that are going to have to live here in 25 years. And so we did, and we talked to a lot of high school students, we talked to young professionals, which a lot of you know is extremely important to me. I'd like to keep them here and attract more. And I think the thing that came out of whether it was somebody who was an older resident or a high school student, the thing that came out the most was that they want this community to be connected. And when they think of Ocala, they want to think of community. And the way that they saw that and the way that they thought about those things was making sure that when we were talking about mobility, that, you know, maybe it's not the automobile we first think of, it's bikes, it's walking, it's making sure that we are out there and, you know, able to walk to a park, walk to the store. First of all, it leads for a greener community, which for the upcoming generation is incredibly important, but it also leads to a healthier Ocala, which I know we all really want. So, you know, and for example, a lot of the, you know, when they were using example was Lake Weir and 31st Street. I live near there, and to see the difference from what it was when I was growing up to what it is now, there's people walking, people are excited, and they're healthier. And so a lot of people use that as an example of things that you guys have done that have been great. You know, they talked about bus system a lot. You know, when you're talking about moving people from one part of the community to the next, you really have to think about all access to all different individuals of different economic backgrounds. And it's a fantastic thought that we could have a bus system that goes all out to Marion County at different times of the day, and that so you have a child who, you know, wants to go to the college and lives in Bellevue, that they can do that using the bus system. That if somebody needs to go to the hospital or needs to go to the centers, that they can use a bus system for that. You know, of course, downtown came up a lot when we were talking about this, and especially when you're talking to people like young professionals, because that's an incredibly important part of having a vibrant life and wanting to stay here. So it was making sure that Tuscola and downtown were connected. That's important. They see Tuscola as an option out there for entertainment, picnics, taking your family out there. They wanted to see different types of mixed use downtown, whether it's having a place that has restaurants, has retail, has commercial, you know, and then you can live on top. I know I wouldn't mind living downtown. I think it would be great. You know, using examples from other cities that attract great young professionals, St. Pete, Lakeland, Baldwin Park, like was mentioned before. having a lot of activity, looking at architectural design, bringing up some of the history that we have. We're Brick City. How do we include that into our downtown or into any part of Ocala? You know, downtown is seen as the middle of Marion County and Ocala, but how do we get people there? So making sure that 441, 27, 200, all of those gateway streets are attractive and people want to drive down them and they want feel safe driving down them. I think the biggest thing is that people want to feel safe when they're out there. You know, in the end, it was about making sure that people were happy living here. And there's, you know, we'll go through all the different things that they really enjoy, but I think that in the end, it goes down to they just want to be connected to each other. And how you do that is you just make it a little bit more personal. You make things more vibrant, more exciting. And doing that is very simple with just some of the simple things that have been done. Even with free Wi-Fi downtown is a great example of how you guys have really added an element that was needed. I think that, you know, when we're thinking about all of this, it's the one thing that came out over and over again is that it's all the infrastructure's there. We just really need to kind of pull up the weeds and get to it and feel confident in building what's already there and growing that system. Todd? Yes.
Hi, I'm Todd Rudiani, and I'll be discussing the actual recommended vision. So after we went through all of those public meetings and tried to get as much information as we could from the citizenry of Ocala, it was our responsibility to take that and create a consensus. We reviewed the public input, and this wasn't taken lightly. It was actually an iterative process where we started with what we thought was a general consensus, and then over several meetings discussed anything that we thought might should change or really didn't represent what was the true consensus of the city. I specifically remember a 30-minute conversation over one road, just because we wanted to make sure that we had what the city truly wanted, and it's Northeast 35th Street, but how that road should be developed in the future. And after we developed as a group the community consensus, then we met in small groups with the co-chairs of each of the different areas and made sure that they had a complete understanding of what we thought the community wanted. And probably the most interesting thing is that regardless of the background of someone or what part of the city that they're from, there really truly was a general consensus as to what people wanted Ocala to look like in the next 25 years. And looking at this picture, or this the graphic, it's pretty, you know? It's got a lot of nice colors. It's attractive to the eye. But if you look at it more closely, it's not just pretty. It's a beautiful vision of what our city can look like. It's a city with a gridded network of complete streets, with sidewalks, buses, bike paths, multimodal transportation. You know what we're looking for: buildings lining streets and higher density areas to increase walkability, activity, and a feeling of comfort for our citizens. We have an expansion. If you look at the blue dotted lines, those are the expansion of transit, not just within our city, but connecting to other communities in this part of Florida. And the green dotted lines, or dashed lines, are recreational trails, and they're connecting an integrated network of community parks, which provide everyone in our community access to the recreational facilities in Ocala. Probably one of the most important things to Ocalans were the blue stars that you're going to see on that picture. And those are iconic gateways, so that anybody who drives into our city can see the pride that we have for the community that we live in. And you'll notice areas that are apt for redevelopment where citizens wanted higher intensity uses, like downtown Ocala, with mixed use, like Summer said. A lot of young professionals were wanting restaurants with apartments on top, so I guess you can wear your pajamas when you go out to eat, right? But you'll also notice areas where our citizens were adamant about preservation of the heritage of our community, like our historic areas. And you'll notice that our residents also have a concern for the future economic development of Ocala, and I know that you guys are very well aware of both the airport and the Magna properties, and you'll see higher intensity development in those areas as well. But this vision is only, this is just the first step. It was a lot of work. It really was a lot of work, but this is just the first step in a long process. And the most important thing is, how do we implement these strategies so that we can get to where we want to be in the next 25 years?
Okay. How do we get there? I guess go over some general strategies. The 2035 vision has now been produced and is before you for adoption. We urge you to adopt the vision and incorporate it into the Ocala Comp Plan. This is what the citizens of this community want. We need to evaluate and prioritize the planning and capital improvement projects to support implementation of the vision. We must continue the leadership group participation. We, as a leadership group, are committed to seeing that the vision comes to fruition. We are willing to be involved in future land use and zoning changes as well as proposed developments. We plan on meeting regularly from this point forward to make sure the vision is followed. We must utilize the vision in any future developments as a guideline. We must encourage staff and council to support the implementation of the vision. We need to evaluate areas for redevelopment, promote interconnectivity between communities such as the east and west side of Ocala. We must conduct studies for redevelopment of the Tuscarawilla Park area. We also need to look at the potential for future annexations. And finally, we need to obviously work with the county to establish joint planning areas that promote and follow the vision. And at this time, I'll have Steve Albright discuss urban form and open space strategy.
Thank you, Paulo. Good morning. I'm Steve Albright, and again, I was the co-chair of the Urban Forum and Open Space Committee. And you can see before you, Urban Forum and Open Space deals with intensities and mixtures of use within our city. On the map that we have up here, and I don't think it's on your screen anymore, but I don't know if we can go back to that, Mike. The urban form and open space is represented on that map by the coloring, mainly. You'll see a shading from yellow, representing low intensity, up to red, which is the higher intensities. And you can see, now you probably won't be surprised where the focus of the higher intensity development is, but you can see right in the middle is very deep, dark red. And that was a recurring theme that we just, and you've heard, we just do not have enough mixed-use, high-intensity development. And pretty much across the board, that's exactly where it needs to go. We have formulated some strategies specific to urban form and open space. I think we have a sheet on that, but there's four of them. First, we think that we would suggest that you develop a map similar to this so that you can identify the areas that you want with new development, redevelopment, and or preservation. And along those lines, then you can initiate comprehensive plan amendments and potentially some capital improvements to help accommodate moving in that direction. We also think that the recommendations of the Recreation and Parks Master Plan will be critical to this. Obviously, that's open space, and that's a critical part of where we live and what we value here in Ocala. And then finally, the last two recommended strategies are is keeping an inventory of properties to have for mixed-use development, i.e. downtown. Find those properties, target them, and make sure they're available when the opportunity arises. Same thing with inventory of properties near the transit corridors, because the mobility is a big part of this, too. That was constantly talked about, is connectivity and not having to drive a car. Love to be able to bicycle down to the convenience, not even convenience store, grocery store, or to the movie theater. And on a final note, I just wanted to let you all know that this is, going through this process for me has been unbelievably educational, both personally and professionally. The things that we've learned that have come to light have been real eye-opening, and I hope that you all will strongly consider adopting this. I'm quite certain you'll find it to be a very, very significant tool. I think it's particularly powerful because it was the citizens had such a big part in it, the citizens that elected all of you, and you're using their input to make decisions on their behalf. As a matter of fact, a great example is this downtown redevelopment decision that you all are facing here very soon. And our vision addresses all of that and what we believe the citizens of Ocala want to see there. So I hope you'll strongly consider it. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, I guess I will move forward with the building site design strategies. Obviously, amend the land development code, encourage innovative design and implement the vision, develop a form-based code to regulate the desired design, site design, building form for appropriate areas of the city. You know, create incentive programs to encourage infill development or redevelopment, and provide shade for pedestrians, preserve and protect natural environment, enhance the beautification of the built environment through landscaping standards.
Good afternoon, council members and others. I'm Clark Yandel. It's my pleasure to be here. I appreciate our city council hiring this group of professionals and the staff that you have, your full-time staff, to take these citizens and give us the tools to go out and do what you want us to do, and that's to see the citizens and bring back to you. Yes, we have ideas, but yes, we've gathered ideas from others. And yes, we have hope. We have hope that this study will be etched into the future of Ocala. We expect to see real success in the next 25 years. Many of us won't be here to enjoy the 25th year, but as Summer had to say, you know, we focused and we saw the vision of younger people so they could carry on what needs to be done. What I plan to discuss with you is mobility and community connectivity strategies. And they are listed for you, but I have a few remarks. You know, Cala has gateways. Those of us that have been here many years remember down on South Magnolia Avenue in the 40s and the 50s when there was a gateway welcoming the people that came to the city of Ocala. We think that it's important that the three intersections that we have with I-75, that we always remember that we present Ocala with its best face and that we have these gateways identified and that we continue to work through the years to make sure that landscaping is a part, providing for an interconnected street system. We can't do business in the future like we've done business in the past. There are roads that need to be put on diets. We don't need five lanes or four lanes. We don't necessarily need to build new roads when we can redistribute traffic into existing roads. That can be a godsend for your budgets. Can you imagine how property could might possibly be procured by easement to widen sidewalks, make linear parks that would accompany these roads? Can you imagine the schools, N.H. Jones, Howard Mill, Ward Highlands, South Ocala, other schools that are within the city where we could have linear parks? All of those schools can connect to parks, and we're going to have a parks and recreation. You'll be hearing that in a few weeks. But connectivity to parks is very, very important. We have to save road trips. We're looking for bicycling. We're looking for trails where people can exercise. It's good for their health. We have trails that could run to the south and could move into the Greenway. We have a railway here in the middle of Ocala that could move west and help us open up the west side. Sidewalks, yes, but we want wide sidewalks. And we need to get bicycles away from the roadway. We need to have a curb between them. These are things in the future that we think are going to be important. When we talk about transportation, we need to consider that how do we connect with the villages? How do we connect with Dunellen? Remember, we're talking about 20, 25 years out, so we have to think for the future. We all know about the past, but we have to plan for the future. And we need to have ways that we can plan to, there's an airport in Gainesville, there's an airport here in Ocala, and we need connectivity between those major activities. 35th Street, we had a 30-minute discussion about 35th Street because we know that the Magna property is going to be an area that's going to be large in size and will take care of 20, 25 acre where hundreds of people will work. And we have to make sure that there's passageway that's there. Those kind of roads, you need heavy passageway, but you don't need that everywhere. You only need that in places to where it's necessary. The barriers. Think about Highway 40, how it has divided the city of Ocala for all these years. Look at Pine Street, what it has done. But it's a barrier, and we have to find ways to remove those barriers. Highway 200 is a barrier. You can't get across Highway 200 safely. It just won't happen. We have to find ways to plan in the future so that we can eliminate those kind of problems. Connectivity is part of the key to quality lifestyle that we want to have here in Marion County. We thank you again for the opportunity to serve. It's been a pleasure to serve with our other team. A lot of people have talked and a lot of people have listened. And the studies that we've had, we have listened to the citizens. We told them, you don't have to worry about funding it. We want to hear what you think. And what you're hearing is what we heard from the citizens. Thank you very much.
Clark, if we could get some help with funding, that would be nice.
Unfortunately, that's not part of our protocol. But we know you guys can do a great job. Do you have any other questions that I might answer? Or
anybody have any questions for Clark?
Okay. Thank you,
Clark.
Okay, so now we're here and we're looking at the next steps. Obviously, we got the adoption of the vision plan that we would encourage you to adopt. You've got the recreation and parks plan that's coming through on the 26th. And we're going to look at the comp plan evaluation and appraisal report amendments, and then the neighborhoods sub-area studies. I would like to add, you know, that we can start small. If you take downtown, for instance, and use it as an example or a potential hub to build and learn off of, and then we can take that same strategy and idea and implement it into other parts of the city. My personal idea that I had when I got involved was, you know, we've got Osceola Avenue, and it's got a rail system that goes to Tuscaloosa Park, comes right over 40, goes by the hospital, by Brick City Park, and eventually ends up by 36th Avenue and Murray Camp Road. And wouldn't it be great to have some sort of trolley that could get people back and forth and maybe redevelop Osceola? I'm not saying to redevelop Osceola, but that's just, you know, one road that you can take and actually offer incentives and for a redevelopment area. So kind of, you know, thought, you know, what could we do? And there's lots of potential within the city that we can do to make this a better place. You know, Steve touched on the proposals that were presented to you on the parking garage and the Sprint building. You know, we hope that this vision is looked at and somehow implemented into that process as it comes before you. And lastly, we, as a leadership group, would like to stay involved with the vision for the city of Ocala for years to come. We are dedicated to citizens of this city, and we would like to make this city the best place to live today and always. We truly thank you We thank staff and the consultants for your cooperation, consideration, and willingness to make a difference and change for the benefit of this fine community that we call Ocala. And I'd just like to say, if I've missed anything or anybody would like to add from the leadership group at this time, please come forward. And if there are any questions that you all have for me,
thank you.
Good afternoon at this point. I'm going to take just a couple of minutes of your time. It has been a delight to be part of this group, to have the experience of going through the educational process, of interacting with the public in the various meetings that were held over the last several months. And then to try to work through coming to some agreement. And actually, it wasn't that difficult. I want to talk about that in a minute. But about what the vision ought to be for this city for the next 25 years. And Mary, you asked, gee, it'd be nice if we had some money, if you had some ideas about money. And what I put on the table this morning with in that regard is that it is a 25-year vision. And I think no one expects that it's all going to happen tomorrow. And one of the things we sometimes get into is we want it now, and we kind of think about it as being now. But it's a long time out. It's going to take a long time to get there. But a couple of points. I wanted to sort of say amen, I guess, to the idea that this is Ocala's vision. From the standpoint, I think, I was skeptical when we started. We're going to have all these meetings, we're going to talk to the public, and we've got a website, and we're going to get information from folks across the community on the website and try to interact as much as possible, and we did that. And I think when we got through adding it up, we figured something in the neighborhood of perhaps 1,000 people across the community who at one time or another, in a way or another, we interacted with. And I was skeptical as to whether, when it all done, we were going to find that, in fact, there was real consensus across this community about what direction we ought to go in. And you've heard this morning that I think our sense very, very much is there was. In various meetings, they talked about various, I'm not going to go back through all of that again, but they talked about very specific things over and over again. That's what the vision's all about. Then the next question is, okay, we've got a vision. Is that something we're going to use? Are we going to go down the road with that? Or are we going to do as Paula suggested a second ago and keep it alive? Or is it going to go the road of so many visions that we've all been part of over the years, where you have consultants, you go through a process, you come up with the plan. And this isn't really a detailed plan. This is sort of, if you were in the art world, this is a sketch, and it's there, and it's not a tremendously defined, but it gives us all a sense of here's where we're going. Well, are we going to hold that out in front of us or not? And too often, my experience, we went through that at the hospital every other year. We'd go through a process. We'd update. But the idea is not to let it get on the shelf, but instead to keep it in front of you as the decisions are being made in an ongoing fashion. Paula suggested the leadership group would like to continue to be involved. And I'll put it perhaps a bit more directly to you. I'd suggest that we would love to volunteer to this council to be the group that we are today for you as we go forward, so that as things are happening in the city and decisions are to be made, we can put on the table for you, yeah, that looks like that's right in line with the vision, or though we'd be going way off track with that. You see what I'm saying? We'd love to be able to do that. And it's one of the recommendations, a strong one in list that you've got in the information that's been brought to you. I think we're bringing you Ocala, the people of Ocala's vision. And I think we're bringing to you something, I'm probably not going to be here, but in 25 years can really make a huge difference as to what this community is and represents itself to be across the United States of America. And it's going to take some money, and that's going to take some time, and it isn't going to be instantaneous, but things are going to get better. And I think what's on the table can help getting better happen faster. So, thank you.
Thank you, Dyer. All right. This time, Nancy, you want to speak?
Yes. Sure. Just very briefly. Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Letting, and I, like my other teammates, had a marvelous experience. I'm probably the newest member of the community on the Vision team. But like so many in our community, and like the trend in the country, many people now are moving to communities because they choose to. I chose to move to Ocala simply because of its opportunities, the location, and all of the things that we so enjoy about it. So I am part of the new trend in terms of the mobility throughout our country. We've all seen wonderful examples of communities that had the luxury to develop master plans in the 1800s with great park systems. We've seen great examples of communities west of the Mississippi that are fairly new. We, within our own community, have seen examples of planned unit developments and the many incredible ways that neighborhoods, small micro neighborhoods, are created. But as a member of the team, it was just absolutely striking to me that no matter where we went, which meeting we attended, there was such consensus around the general broad-based vision that everyone in the community articulated. And that was that there was a need and a desire for connectivity and mobility. And I think that the plan that we have now is, the vision that we have now, speaks to that in every one of its aspects. And I would just simply suggest and urge you to adopt this vision and also know that you now have a very, very committed group of 18 individuals, all of whom are willing to go forward and work with you and be partners with you in this process. It's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And I can already see aspects of the vision emerging because I work, as you know, at Brick City Center for the Arts. And I'm downtown every day. And what I have seen happen in only 3 years in downtown Ocala is absolutely remarkable. And many of the changes that are occurring are based on plans that have been probably on the shelf, in the can, perhaps just simply awaiting funding. But there's been tremendous change. The new Broadway beautification plan is shaping up very nicely. So I think that we are on the cusp. And again, I want to thank you so much for participating and also encourage you to please use us. Use us because we're all willing to be a part of this. And I think that each of us knows a number of people who would also volunteer to be helpful in many, many ways. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Nancy. All right. Anyone else like to speak before we go into questions and discussion? Any questions or comments from council members? Councilwoman Heinbachel.
Yes, and this is kind of for the whole group or whoever's a spokesperson. Were there any surprises that came out, like things that were completely sort of unexpected that citizens brought forward?
I would say that I particularly was surprised that people wanted to see more mixed use type developments, and it was just, we did that one of the public meetings, I think it was one of the first or second one that we did, where we were given dots of different colors, and you would go and prioritize what you thought, what we wanted to see the city look like. And overwhelmingly, that mixed-use type developments in downtown, I mean, must have had, we didn't have enough paper space to put all those color dots on there.
Right.
That was a surprise to me that it seemed like everybody, I guess, no one I vented to the council or to leaders of the community in the past of what they wanted to see, and this was a grand opportunity for that. So mm-hmm. personally, that was a surprise to me. I don't know if anyone has anything else to add on that.
There was one in the interactive activities on Friday and Saturday mm-hmm. that when the participants were using the Legos, that they were surprised that at the gateway you could have high intensity. And that's amazing, because most of the time we look for high intensity inside or high density area where there's a lot of business. But the reason why the participants put it there is to attract people, let people know this is a common area. They could come there for picnic or some kind of entertainment. It was like an open space, mm-hmm. but then they built like an arch to, you know, sort of like it is going into the villages. Right. When you have a beautiful arch like that, it's just attractive. Mm-hmm. So we wanted something like that for Ocala as gateways for coming in, something that would denote our uniqueness, and everybody would see that and be attracted to it.
Right. Thank you.
Anything else?
Susan? No.
Any other question, Mary Sue, John, Mayor?
Yeah, I just,
I'd just like.
Go ahead.
I'd like to commend you. I think you did an excellent job.
Thank you.
I don't know how you chose the team or who chose it, but you got a good mixture of people, and I think you've done an excellent job.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, staff, for that as well. Maybe throw darts at a poster and pick out the names, but no, it's definitely a good group with diverse people, and I was very pleased with that.
I was not there on the first meeting, and Paul was chosen. I never knew who Paul was and what he could do or anything, but I think he's done a fantastic job and taken hold of leadership, and we just realized that we really do love working with him.
Thank you. That was funny. The first meeting we had, we were just bouncing off the visioning statement, and I'll tell you the truth, I did not want to be the chairman. I mean, I just was going to keep my mouth shut. I have other things going on, and I just kept my head down. I was sitting next to Steve, and we were just going back and forth joking about who was going to be chair. And finally, I blurted out this visioning statement that was a compilation of what everyone was putting together, and next thing you know, I got nominated. I accepted, so I'm very pleased that I actually
anyone else, Mayor?
I just want to echo Mary Sue's comments. I appreciate all the hard work that y'all put into this point. I know it's a long process, and I think we're definitely going to get there. A lot of the ideas, and you know, I love the fact that it encompasses all of Ocala, and really create that connectivity. So we're not just focusing on one pinpoint. We're just really looking at the holistic view of the whole community. So thank you for that work so far.
Okay, thank you.
And I would just echo their comments too. I did go to the first meeting when you were elected.
That's right.
And yeah, that was quite interesting. But yeah, the participation from your group and the commitment was just, you know, amazing. And I went to, I think, one you had out at CFCC. You had a lot of folks and a lot of participation at that one. And yeah, I mean, it's a great group. You guys did a great job, and I'm looking forward to implementing it. You know, a lot of the things you talk about, 25 years, I was looking at some of the dates. Some of them are like next year and through 2012 that we can get going, and you know, so we can start seeing some positive results, and not hopefully I'll be around 25 years from now, but we can see it progress, you know, through the years, and hopefully in the next couple of years, you know, we can implement some of these changes, get them going.
That was a little bit too of trying to think outside, you know, convincing people, especially when we were doing the building blocks segment, you know, wow, you're putting these big buildings here, how's that going to happen? Have to really look forward and down the road. You can't just think of what we have. And obviously, you need a visioning plan to try to make changes. Doesn't mean that it's going to be followed to the T. There'll be adjustments and such, but we've got to plan and look forward to the future, and that was a little bit difficult for some folks to kind of think outside that box or that window of the right. future.
Councilman Owen.
A couple of things. I guess maybe a question or just a general comment. How much has, or in your committee, in this all this group, Dyer got a little bit close to touching on some of it. Mr. Yandy was talking about, we can be excited about this till 2035, and we can, this council and the city of Ocala, and we can latch on. A couple of things I was listening to, 35th Street, you said kept coming up. We kind of don't have any control over 35th Street. That is a county thing. Some of the things, Michigan, you were talking about State Road 200. We've sat in here and short of throwing pencils at FDOT about what they do with State Road 200. My thing is, my question, maybe it's a challenge to you or whatever we can do. There are going to be outside forces that we're going to have to partner with. We can be, like I said, the excitement, we can be gung-ho and run right up to 35th Street and run right into the you-know-what of the county.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can either accept us or not accept us. So there's going to be some, you know, the excitement's going to have to, from a committee standpoint, there's got to be some reaching out to other entities besides the city. I mean, the city's sold. I mean, this is what we're doing this because we are proud of ourselves. And that's all. And let's move this forward. Let's all this great work. We're going to need help from the county. We're going to need help from the state. We talk about State Road 40 right out here. You know, I've jokingly talked about call the state, tell them to figure out what to do with their road on how to get to Daytona because maybe we need to dig it up. And you know, people laugh at that, but we're talking about Pine Street, same thing.
You're right.
We don't need that road anymore. Tell the state they need to figure out how to get from Orlando to Gainesville. And you know what I'm saying? It's just there's going to be that reaching out we have to do to make this happen. So, I mean, I just hopefully wherever that's at as we move forward, we don't have to sell ourselves. We have to sell some outside forces.
But you're absolutely right. And we're going through this process looking at 40, looking at 441, 20. They're all state roads. It's a 600-pound gorilla. They tell you what to do and whether or not the city is willing to maintain those segments of the road. Where's the money for that maintenance? So there are obstacles. I have expressed my concerns to DOT locally and in the upper levels about this, and obviously their quote safety and all this stuff, and you know, there's obviously expenses involved in those roads. 35th Street came up at one of our last meetings because with the work that I'm involved in, I realized that was going to be a four-lane road potentially, and so should we now start thinking about 35th Street? Heck, and 25 years, it may very well be, and everything on the north side might be annexed into the city. So should start thinking about, hey, maybe we need to get with the county, show them our visioning plan, and hopefully they can implement some of what we recommend to be at road diets or complete streets that have the sidewalks, even near parks. Maybe they would take that into consideration during their design process or build out process. What we would like to avoid is how 31st Street was built. I mean, I live right off of that road, and the cars are screaming by, and so the motorcycles, and even with the sidewalks, my wife won't set foot on that sidewalk because of the way the car speed today.
35th Street is a great example that to date, as of right now, the county has not embraced anything that the city has asked. Go up there right now, turn off of 441, turn right, and go down 35th Street and look at these, all people that moved up there, you know, the homes that they've got now, and
yeah.
these monuments, these edifices that they now have, they're pulling into the game. And they are what you would consider some of these walkways and linear parks and all this. Those people are going to want a little bit of a to get rid, to move their move their South Fork entrance back another 100 feet. And, I mean, that's just an example of you know, the city saying, please don't do this, please don't do this. I mean, 35th Street is going to be not what it is in 2035. I don't worry about it, at, you know. We'll worry about that in 235, not, you know, not right now. And so it's just some examples. I just think that there's going to have to be some cuddling up with outside forces to get a lot of this happening.
I wholeheartedly agree. Sure. No problem, Mr. Engel.
I appreciate you bringing that up because it is a reality, and we know that. We're going to be on your side, and we'll set an example.
Go show some love down the
You guys have done a great job. You have already started. We see evidence that some of the things that we think need to happen are already happening. And I also think that City of Ocala and Marion County are working closer now than they have in many years. This is great. This is a solution to a problem that's been around for many, many years. But this team will be behind you. And we know that we have to dream big, but we really feel like that we're bringing back to you what the citizens of Ocala want. And you can take it and go to the bank with it. And we're here to help as a team. And you're going to need participation from DOT, and we will constantly, we'll do what we have to do with the Metropolitan Planning Organization. We will be on your side. These things are realities that have to take place. Many times when I go down Southeast 36th Avenue and I see the area from Fort King over to about 17th Street, and I see where properties, that is a perfect place for a linear park.
Absolutely.
And that's what should have happened but didn't happen. And we can't live in the past. We got to look forward. But in the future, all the schools that I mentioned, linear parks can take you to a park safely. Yeah, they're struggles, but we're in this together, so let's move on, please.
Thank you. Rick?
I think it was about a year ago when the first phase of visioning started at staff level, and it took baby steps and got to the point where we are, but I want to speak just briefly about the vision within the vision, if I could. Probably didn't know there was a vision within the vision, but there is. And part of that was citizen engagement, citizenship ownership, citizenship, period. And I would remind us that we are Marion County. It's not us or them. We are Marion County. We do vote. We are residents of Marion County. And I think it's important, the reason why the best tool this city has to accomplish this mission, to resolve the issues that Councilman Owen has brought up, is a tool called citizens. And they are more powerful than any other tool that we have. If they are united in purpose with a single vision of what they want to be when we grow up. And it appears to me that we are there. And no DOT can overcome that. No county commission can overcome that. And no other officer can overcome it. And we will begin to make strides, and we'll see some significant strides. And every decision that is made going forward, does it promote the vision or demote the vision? And if it promotes it, if we do it, if we don't, we won't. And sometimes we say, well, it's going to take us 20 years to get there. So what? We'll put that jigsaw puzzle together one piece at a time. And sometimes it takes me a long time to put those pieces together. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a beautiful picture. And our children and grandchildren deserve that. And besides all of that, it's going to be the most economical, sustainable method that we can do. If we're talking about how do we pay for things in the future, this is how we do it. And I thank all of you for your efforts and your continued leadership. And I would say one thing. As much as you now know about all this, wouldn't it be great if 100 more knew the same?
Yeah.
And 1,000 more? So
you're
ambassadors going forward, here and forever. And you all have to live to be at least 100.
After we get the parks and trails, we'll definitely work on that exercise.
All right. What's the next step, Rick? What do we need to do?
Nothing today. This will be on your agenda for the 19th to adopt these broad strategies. Of course, the next step in the budget we just approved is then to begin to work on the codes, the land use, the building design criteria, all those type of things, which would be the next phase as we move forward. We'll continue to work. As you already know, many of the things we are beginning to do and work towards. So we'll bring that back on the 19th, and then again on the 26th would be the Parks and Recreation Master Plan presentation.
Okay. All right. Good.
So.
All right.
Thank you all for listening. We appreciate the opportunity present this vision to you. Again, thanks to staff and consultants and my fellow leadership group members. Thank you.
All right. You did a great job. It was a good
Thank
presentation.
You.
And Ken, I'd like to thank the planners that we hired. They did a great job.
Yeah, they did. Just take a few minutes.
Take just a minute.
Get out.
Just watch out.
Do a lecture.
Hey,
did you hear that radio show still on it?
No.
I called him. Abelia and that Joe. I think that Joe was the guy
that the reason he had. All the three that complained.
They have their own radio.
Good for them. I called Sam. He goes, I just didn't appreciate being attacked. I said, as neither did I. I said, where you been, Sam? I said, you know, and I said, my disappointment is that as brilliant as you are, you react on newspaper. You know, why don't you come down and get the facts? Oh, I'll just come down and be involved.
What about his?
What a dysfunctional bunch of groups that are parked on around. Oh, he said, I got a bunch of answers. That's not going to, yeah, people aren't going to like the answers I got. And I said, when he was talking about that, I said, but here's the thing. I said, only three of y'all showed up for the money thing. I said, if we go to shut down something in the city, I said, I've already got a second golf course. If we make the parks and rec, you'll have 1,000 people.
Yeah,
1,000
people.
Yeah. I mean, what defined non-essential? It's all essential.
Parks and Rec for you is obviously non-essential. But what kind of community would, what company would come to a community with no parks and recreation? I mean, what kind of forward thinking is that?
You're a good team.
Yes. Get Starlin Matt's presentation here. Second, just gonna let them get out. Thank you, did a great job.
Thank you.
Y'all. Can we go? There's three of us. Angel says we can go. You didn't think it was funny.
Yeah, it's true.
Daniel, teasing.
Rick, could you?
We're just teasing.
Get them either out or out the door.
We'll wait.
We're just teasing.
All right. Our next item on the agenda is the electric rates. And at this time, I will turn it over to Matt Brower.
Give me just about another 30 seconds. Whenever the council is ready, we can begin.
All right. You can go ahead.
Well, thank you. It's going to be a hard act to follow, the first presentation, so we'll do the best we possibly can.
You can drop the power rates.
We'll have everyone's undivided attention, wouldn't we? Thank you. It is also a pleasure for me and my team to be here. I'm going to tag team this with Karen White, our financial manager, and Tony Clayton, who's our key accounts representative, and we're going to kind of do this as a tag team. We're going to discuss with you a number of ideas relating to electric utility rates. In the end, we hope these ideas will increase our rate competitiveness. So as we go through these ideas, should you have any questions, need any elaborations, please stop us and allow us the opportunity to clarify any ideas that you may have. The four ideas that we're going to talk about include incentivized time of use rates, load retention credit, economic development rate, conjunctive billing, which is actually not a rate but a billing methodology, and then we're going to finish by updating you on our bulk power cost adjustment. We have some exciting news for you on that front. Last Tuesday, the City Council adopted an amendment to our time of use rate. If you recall, we reduced the number of hours in our peak hours. For example, in the summer, we went from 9 hours down to 4. And in the winter, as it shows here, we went from 4 hours in the morning down to 3. And in the evening, we also went from 4 hours down to 3. This one is showing the summer going from the 9 hours down to 4 hours. And so the first idea we want to present to you is the idea that we set a demand rate at a level to further incentivize customers to decrease on-peak usage. Okay? This would generate potential savings to the city based on FMPA's current demand billing method. The savings passed on to the time-of-use customers would be from the lower energy would be in the form of lower energy costs. Okay, and we're going to talk about this concept a little bit more in just a moment. But let me first mention how FMPA does their demand billing. This is important to understand. What you're seeing right now is a pie that indicates the percent each ARP city, and there's 14 cities, pays for demand cost. You can see Ocala pays 22%. Kissimmee, who is the largest, we're actually the second largest, pays 24%, Key West 11%, Jacks Beach 13%, and all the other communities combined pay about 30%. The demand costs, this is important, the demand costs are determined by each city's demand at the time of the quintessential peak, at the time of quintessential peak each month. In other words, each of the 14 member cities of the ARP have a peak. And what FMPA does is take the maximum peak, the quintessential peak, and each city's portion of the demand cost is their proportionate share of that quintessential peak. Okay? And in the past, Ocala's has been about 22%. Okay? So simply put, the quintessential peak is the highest simultaneous peak demand of all ARP members during the month. That might be a better way of describing that.
Would you say that one more time?
Simply put, the quintessential peak, the highest simultaneous peak demand of all ARP members during the month.
Okay.
Okay. So what does this mean in terms of our idea? What we're trying to do is provide a higher demand, a higher price signal for the on-peak block. Okay. So for example, if you look at the illustration, the blue line in that column that identifies between 2 and 6 o'clock would be the current rate. And what we're suggesting is that we put a higher cost signal, higher price signal, to further incentivize people to come off the system during that peak. The cost savings that the city would glean from that would in turn be used to further reduce the energy rate, as shown on the red line, from the current energy rate that's charged on the time of use rate. So let me state that again. By increasing the demand cost during that peak window, we would achieve some savings because our portion of that quintessential peak would be reduced. We would look at taking that savings and reducing our energy rate from what it is now on the time of use to a lower rate, as shown in red on that table there. Okay?
Real quick, man.
Please.
Define summer as, I mean, like Farmer's Almanac summer, or are we just talking June, July, August? I mean, what is your definition of summer?
Our ordinance,
oh, my God, it's hot. We're in summer.
Our ordinance actually identifies, I believe, goes from April through November. Is that correct? April through October.
April 1 or
So that's our definition?
Yes.
Okay.
And of course, winter would be the interim months they're in.
Yeah, all right, thanks.
Yeah. So this idea is saying, hey, look, let's provide an additional time of use rate structure that has higher demand cost but lower energy cost to see if we can't bring aboard additional customers to this rate classification. Okay? The next concept is called a load retention credit. Back in the mid-90s, Congress and FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, began flirting with and giving overtures that they were going to deregulate the electric utility industry. And of course, that sent some shockwaves through the utilities as they began to realize that any utility company could begin trying to lure away, of course, all your customers. And so in an attempt to remain competitive and retain our customers, the city and FMPA, ARP, devised a strategy wherein the ARP began budgeting annually a load retention credit. And that credit is still budgeted annually, and it sums to about $360,000. At the same time, the city established a rider to general service demand rate tariff. And what that rider allowed us to do was enter into contracts with high load factor companies so that we could retain them as a customer should the industry be deregulated. And so the city actually entered into numerous contracts with some of our high load companies, trying to, again, facilitate their load on our system. Well, as you know, deregulation never happened, and the threat of deregulation has pretty much gone away. But ARP continues to budget that load retention credit. So the question then becomes, what do we do with that credit? And we have a couple ideas we would like to discuss with you. One is to continue to use the credit to reduce FMPA cost. In other words, allow it to offset our energy demand and transmission costs. Two, resume offering load retention credit programs. This, of course, would require us to define the terms of said programs. In fact, the very last contract that we signed a number of years ago expired in August of this year with JR Plastics. Okay, so we have no more commitments, but we do have the annual budget of $360,000 that's with FMPA right now. And the last one, or the last option, would be to support economic development activities. And again, that would have to be defined in terms of what the strategic plan is and what the benefit might be to the city. Okay? Any questions on that? Next, we're going to talk about an economic development rate. I'm going to invite Karen to talk about that.
We got it now. I participated in APPA class, and kind of at the end of the class, they threw out this economic development rate. After coming back, I participated in some internal meetings, and this rate kind of continued to pop up in conversations about what we could do on the commercial side and the issues facing the community, what kind of things that we can do. So we kind of did just a small amount of research into the economic development rate to see if that was something that council would potentially want to go further into to see if it's something we wanted to offer. One of the first things we wanted to find out was the PSC open to something like this. And the PSC has approved economic development rates already. Some of our IOUs already offer this rate. The guidelines for qualification for the rate would certainly be defined by us. I kind of think of it in terms of our existing EIP program and whatever qualifications we have with that would be maybe married to that program. And the strategic plan that we have for the city. This is not meant to be a permanent rate for anyone that would apply for the rate. It would be like a 5-year max. We could certainly set the term. 5 years is what we've seen is kind of the standard that you start out at a 20% discount at 5 years, and then it ratchets down until you get to where you're basically at the same rate you would have been as a regular commercial customer at the base rate. and the participation could be limited. We could certainly choose to, if we wanted to use the load retention credit to make it like a revenue neutral option to the city. You know, we could base that on either number of customers or load on the system, somehow tie it so that, you know, it's just not open to an infinite number of customers. It would only be limited to a certain amount of customers so that we could make sure that we're not hurting the city as far as not taking in enough revenue to cover the other programs that we offer. But it's certainly an option to look at either for development, redevelopment, retention in the area. It's just another option that maybe you might want to consider with the load retention credit.
Just a question. Would that be for new customers or existing customers?
I think we would certainly we would be setting the parameters. So okay. Whatever council would be interested
in. And it would start out at a 20% discount from what it is now and then go to zero over a five-year period?
Just a suggestion.
It could just some options. Yes. We could define it how we want.
Okay.
And it could be for either new or retention efforts.
Right.
And, you know, when this was first discussed, I think it's very important that we set some good parameters around this, because the intent is that we, if we're going to use these dollars to do that, it needs to invite private investment.
Right.
So I guess what we were saying, if you buy into the concept, then we'd like to come back and recommend some strategies to implement.
Okay. Well, when you say it would involve some investment by the companies that are participating in it?
No, sir. What I mean is obviously there's no benefit if we just give it to existing companies, but if we use it to attract new companies to the
right.
area or for retention purposes,
right.
that would be some benefit to them.
But
that's follow some of the similar guidelines we're already used for economic development.
But how do you tell an existing company going to give it to a new company that's coming into town, but we're not going to give it to you?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, remember, this is a package of, I think, four different options that we're giving here, that the other three will be available to existing companies. And lastly, as we build our customer base, we should be able to continue to drop everyone's rates overall.
Okay. Councilman Owen, do you have something?
Yeah, I would just put you on the spot, Matt, but you mentioned JR Plastics, and to me, they're a real prime example what you're trying to accomplish here. Can you have can you give us an example? When I say an example, just give us like a status. JR Plastics, they're still with us?
Mm-hmm.
And how would their load, I'm just looking, I'm very familiar with them because I buy a lot of plastic from him. So I get them in that building almost, you know, three times a week, and I understand they're 24/7. How's this going to help him?
Couple different thoughts. Let's go back to the first concept, which was the time of use rate.
Right.
He's a 24/7 operation, means his load is a high load factor, means he uses a lot of energy all hours of the day. So by lowering the peak hours down from 9 to 4, that creates a greater incentive on his part to want to consider a time of use rate.
Well, there's an immediate savings just because he reduces the hour. Begin with.
If he should choose to go on the time of use rate, which I don't believe he is right now.
Right.
Further incentivizing it by increasing the demand, lowering the energy rate, he might say, okay, I'm going to run 20 hours of the day instead of 24 because I could be more profitable. And, of
right.
course, that's a pro forma that he'd have to put together. So you look at the low retention credit. He was the last contract to expire. He was receiving about $30,000, I believe, per month as a load retention credit for a number of years. If that program were to be reinstituted, we'd probably want to go after high load factor companies and see if we can't, of course, try to become more competitive with, of course, the 800-pound gorilla, Progress and CECO.
Yep.
The economic development rate. Rick mentioned a moment ago that we're trying to retain and attract new businesses. Whether it's a new business that's bringing jobs or an existing business that's trying to grow jobs, you could create an additional incentive or investment opportunity for these companies.
Let me give a quick example. Santelli Glass, which is new to our community, they're a startup company, and they are gradually building their customer base. Now, right now, because their customer base is less than they want it to be, the cost of production is higher. And as each month goes by and they bring on more customer and sell more product, their production cost per quantity decreases. And so sometimes this economic development rate may be in place until they can build up the customer base. You know, if they're producing X, I don't know how you quantify glass, but X sheets of glass, you know, the more you create, the lower your energy cost and your overhead costs drop. So sometimes economic development rate may be a short-term fix to allow them to posture themselves while they build their customer base and their product production.
Just to clarify, JR Plastics is $30,000 annually, not monthly.
Annually, thank you.
Annually.
Thank
so you. To continue that program means $30,000 to him, which he expired in August.
You called him.
He's got my number on speed dial.
Say that again. Say that again about the $30,000.
He receives $30,000 annually as part of that low retention credit program.
Okay. All right.
It's calculated monthly based off of his actual domain usage and his load factor per month, but it averaged about $30,000 annually, which that does stop. And it also required a five-year contract. And if you recall, that was part of the original agreement, is to make sure that we retain that customer load. Is why okay. We're offering the incentive.
All right. Which, I mean, I know what their utility bills are. It's a small portion of their utility bills. But, you know, it's $30,000. All right.
That's probably a job in his industry.
Pardon?
That's probably a job in his industry, an employee for annual salary.
Yeah.
The fourth concept is called conjunctive billing. It's actually not a rate classification. It's actually a rate methodology. Rate determination methodology. I'm going to invite Tony to talk about that a little bit.
And basically what that does is consolidates multiple metering points for the purposes of billing. And by doing that, we kind of totalize the energy used, the hours, the kilowatt hours that's billed, and then there is a coincidental demand found across all the multiple points and billed as one demand. That can result in a cost savings to the customer. And it's something that was originally done for like Kmart Distribution Center. They had their additional growth, and how we were currently serving them was a primary metered service. And it was a benefit to the utility to do this. The technology was in place with some new metering that we had and gave us the opportunity of doing this consolidation through the metering points. To the point now with the AMI program that we need to make a decision on if it's something we're going to continue try to do this type of process or not, and then it would also possibly allow for cost savings for other customers too.
Tony, will you give an example? Kmart, I think, is a great example of how that works. Talk about the number of transformers and actually how that demand would be calculated.
Yes, basically at that facility, there are six different transformer locations, and in the typical scenario, there are 6 meters there. There are 6 meters at Kmart also. But for billing purposes, they would receive a bill for each individual meter that's there, which they'd get an individual customer service charge, a kilowatt hour charge, and a demand charge based on that specific meter. Through this process, what we can do with the demand is measure what the peak is across all six of them, find the highest peak, and then find the coincidental peak at the same time across the other five, and those demands are then totaled for one demand charge. That also gives them one customer service charge instead of six.
Okay. By averaging across, you might could pull down their peak uses and some of the other redundant costs. Again, in and by itself, it's not significant, but when you begin to package it with some of the other options that we're trying to present on the table, it could begin to make a difference.
And this is obviously targeted for companies that have multiple metering ports, multiple transformers, and that's where this would become effective.
All right.
Okay. The last thing I want to mention is, well, actually, let me, before I do that, these four ideas, what staff hopes to do, of course, is to gauge your interest to determine whether we should invest more time in putting together perhaps a policy on these issues to advance it for a subsequent city council meeting for review and potential consideration. That's really our intent today is get a feel for where you stand and should we spend more time and advance a policy on these issues.
Absolutely. I mean, anything we can do to reduce electric rates, you know, I'm 110% for that. Councilman Priester, you want to move forward with them spending time on
reducing the...
I'm not really sure whether or not we're looking in the benefit of the citizens of Ocala, or whether or not we're looking out for the utilities of Ocala. Can you answer that?
Yeah. I would answer it this way. I would answer it by saying the investment that we would make in some of our general service demand customers means that we have a chance of growing jobs, retaining jobs, and any time that you can add jobs, retain jobs, I think you're benefiting the community as a whole.
Community, but not the consumer out there in the residential.
Well,
we're having continual complaints about the utility costs.
I'm going to answer that one next. The next item on the on my agenda, I'm going to answer that one.
Okay.
Great question, by the way. Which leads me to the last issue I want to talk about, which is the bulk power cost adjustment, which impacts all rate classifications, all utility users. What I want to do is give you an update where we stand on that bulk power cost adjustment. Karen, will you go ahead and pass out? I'm going to pass out August 2010 leaked analysis that FMEA puts together. While Karen's passing that out, I want to make a report to you. And this is significant.
Thank you.
And I want to take just a moment to talk about this. As you know, the external auditors, about 3 weeks ago, gave you a presentation on the fiscal year 2008 audit. Actually, it's a 2009 audit. And what I'm holding here is the condensed financial statements, which was taken out of that CAFR. And what it shows is that in 2007, the electric utility had a net income loss of approximately $1 million. In 2008, the electric utility had a net operating income loss of approximately $1.3 million. In 2009, the electric utility has had a net income positive revenue of $3.7 million, which when you compare it to the loss in 2008, is nearly a $5 million turnaround in a single year. The ship that we've spoken about in the past is gaining steam. The waters are calming, and the storm clouds that we came out of are getting further and further in a rearview mirror. So what does this mean for our bulk rate cost? The rate analysis that Karen just gave you is for August 2010. It shows Ocala at position number 10.
Remember, 2 years ago, we were number one.
We were number one. That's
number
exactly
one
right.
Number one wasn't a good place to be back then.
And so. Since October 2008, our power costs have come down approximately 22%, whereas the bulk power cost adjustment has come down approximately 40%. We have been told by the FMPA that their budgeted cost for fuel, primarily natural gas fuel in the forthcoming fiscal year, is higher than what the actual costs are now anticipated to be. What they've done is update their actual projections. And what they're telling us is the actual numbers are going to be less than their projected numbers. You also consider the fact that our financial hedges continue to unwind. There appears to be some room in next year's budget to see another bulk power cost decrease. And staff is going to look at those numbers and advance to you within the next 30 to 45 days recommendation on the bulk power cost adjustment, which, of course, in turn, would impact and benefit all of our rate customers.
And, Council, if I may, recently there's a letter to the editor about a lady said, would someone please investigate, because her bill was $200-something dollars. So I did. First off, the $236 includes water, sanitation, sewer, everything. Her actual electric bill was $170. And when I looked at that and compared it to last year, she had used 250 kilowatt hours more this month than she did at the same time last year, even with the 22% overall decrease in rates over that time. It also demonstrated that part of that $176 electric bill was a bounce check fee, a reconnect fee, and a late charge, which added up to about $60-something dollars. So when people say these things, if she just purely didn't have to pay the late fees and those type of things, her bill would have been somewhere around $110. And if she had used the same amount of power she did the same year previous, it would have been less than $100. So a lot of this is, you know, it is important to look at, compare apples to apples when we look at these type of things. And I do plan to write this individual a letter personally to explain to them ways in which they can cut those costs. But sometimes when they're still comparing, they're not comparing apples to apples, because her entire bill, 236, included water, sewer, garbage, all those type of things. And you can't compare that to Progress that only charges electric.
Matt, I think that's the one I just gave you. I got the letter.
This one here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And I've already done the research and be getting that off to her.
Thank you.
All right. Let me ask a question. At the last one here on the far right, Florida Power and Light and Tampa Electric, their base rate is 54.12 and then 55.45 for Tampa Electric. Our base rate is, where is it? Our base rate's 84.63. I mean, how do you explain that? How do I explain that to a consumer?
I asked that same question of some consultants a week ago. I said, how is it Florida Power and Light can be so competitive and we cannot? And his answer was this. He says, Florida Power and Light has a lot older generating units.
They have, say that again?
They have much older generating units.
They built their power when it was cheaper.
They built the plants and it was cheaper, and the debt service is paid off. They owe no more.
They're not growing.
Okay. Now recall, the demand cost is all the fixed costs, the debt service, insurance, you know, salaries and benefits. Most of that demand cost for Florida Power Light is non-existent. Now you look at FMPA. We've had to start building our own generation. We've had to start building it when we have more regulations, which increase the cost of building it. We now have, of course, the debt service of the new generation. So we will have higher demand costs. But over years, as that, of course, generation becomes paid for, that will start to drop. And at some point, Florida Power and Light is going to have to reinvest as their units get older. And they're going to have to build new units. They're going to have to comply with the new regulations that make it more expensive. And you'll see them having to come back to the table and ask for rate increases at some point in time as their infrastructure continues to age. And so it's a cyclical issue where that time when theirs is paid off and it was built before the heavy regulations, we're at a time with us where we had built ours and we have a lot of regulations which only increase the cost of doing business.
Well, you know, they're talking about building that Levy County plant, which is, what is it, like maybe $1.2 billion. Our portion of the debt will be, with what we've got now, something like $220-something million, which just the interest cost on that would make our utility bills just astronomical.
Yeah, and that's
astronomical. So what, you know,
that's if we buy into it.
Pardon me?
That's if we buy into it.
And that brings me to this point. You know, one of the things that we had talked about, you know, Rick and I had talked, and I know we've talked about this for a number of years. Why don't we go ahead and start looking at exiting, you know, FMPA? And, you know, one of the things we talked about, if we go ahead and give them notice we're not members of the APR, we don't have to incur the new debt that's taken on. We can still be members of FMPA. We just have to be members of the All Requirements group.
We've spoken with Nick and his team about this, and they're actually looking at providing some other options to where we're not going to be forced, just because the vote went a certain way, to join in. They've expressed a willingness to look at maybe rewriting their rules.
What they're essentially suggesting right now is that if there is enough interest in the Levy County nuclear project to make it as its own separate project and not a part of the ARP project.
Right.
And what this means then is individual cities who are interested in participating in Levy could say, okay, I want to subscribe to this much capacity or that much capacity,
right,
and they would do so outside of the ARP framework, right, which means the ARP costs would not be impacted by that project.
Okay.
Yeah, so just trying to make your decisions on your own, because you may decide to get in or get out, and then you're forced by the vote of the group to go opposite direction.
There's 14 people in it?
In the ARP, there's 14 people, and okay, it's an all requirements project.
Okay.
So we're waiting for that to come forward. Of course, the good news is Levy's pushed out to what, 16, 17?
2022.
Yeah. So.
But I mean, if we were buying power from TECO and FPNL, you know, at these lower base rates, seems like it would save us, you know, a lot of money. That's what I've always talked about. You know, we should have never, as FMPA, gotten the generation business. And, you know, we have. But, I mean, if we were buying power from these folks, seems like it would be a lot less expensive than what we're doing.
Well, recall, if you will, that about 2000 and 2001, FMPA had a lot of power purchase agreements with Progress and with Florida Power and Light. As the economy really geared up, really took on fire, those power purchase agreements went away because they no longer had the capacity to sell, which put FMPA in the position of having to build their own generation to meet the ARP's demand load. And so that's how that came about.
In essence, the building boom hurt the economy in so many ways people don't even realize.
Right.
And that, you know, even cities like ours, you look at Tampa, they're larger, but they didn't have the growth we had.
Right.
So they didn't have to build all the new infrastructure. This city was building new lines and substations, trying to keep up with the fast pace of growth, and all that was being built at high dollars because everything rose to the high cost during the bubble. If we built it now, it's 20-30% less. So that bubble, it impacted everything, not just the housing industry, utilities and everything associated with it. And, you know, the best thing we can do is have a slow, steady growth pattern and not these peaks and valleys, which we can control to some degree by how we look at annexations and how we look at projects that come in. And frankly, as we talked about with the visioning, we actually use the infrastructure we already have. We have a lot of infrastructure sitting in front of empty lots and vacant buildings that we ought to be maximizing before we build a new line out, you know, another mile outside of town.
Right.
I might also add that Florida Power and Light at this time is looking at two nuclear reactors, Turkey Point 1, Turkey Point 2, which is going to cost them in the neighborhood of about $17 to $20 billion. And so they're looking at having to make new investment, just like Progress Energy is as well.
Well, and they can spread it among millions and millions.
A lot more base. Yeah.
And that's really where the power of FMPA comes in at. The question becomes, can we compete with the Florida Power and Light by ourselves, or can we better do it through a consortium of joint action agencies?
Well, and that was the whole point when we signed up, is that let's together go out and buy power as a group of municipalities cheaper than we can as ourselves. And then we got in the generation business, and we were doing, you know, to our customers exactly what Florida Power was doing to us.
But what really hurt us was not so much the built generation as much as it was the financial hedges, hedging 100% of our volumes for a period of 3 years.
Right.
And that happened during a time when there was no leadership at FMPA.
I think the real solution here, at least part of the solution, is that we have the ability to opt in or out based on the decision of this body, not based on the 13 other votes.
Right.
And I think that's really critical as we move forward.
Well, we need to, being in FMPA or out of FMPA or whatever it may be, we need to have the option of when gas prices are low, you know, buy gas. When, you know, nuclear is low, buy that, and have some type of option to buy one of those three.
The other thing we need to exercise with this new legislative session coming up and with the new governor going to be at the table is, do we reopen the conversation about other types of power, getting back to coal?
Right.
I read in the paper, was it TECO that who was it? It was just upgraded all of their
I think it was TECO.
Plants and, you know, to reduce carbon emissions and so forth.
Right.
And they spend a lot of money doing it, but it's still a diversification option,
sure,
which is not available to us now under the current legislation.
Exactly.
So we have to work with whoever the new governor is and the new legislative leadership, which will be mostly new. And this is one of the agenda items we need to have for Steve to work with us on.
Okay.
I might make a couple other comments. One is on Crystal River 3, which we own 1.333%. That by far is our cheapest resource of power, that
right.
Nuclear. And the reason being is because it's been in existence for a lot of years. Most of the debt's been paid off, and so we're paying for the operating cost.
So why can't we just buy our power from there?
Well, right now,
no one's willing to sell it.
Well, they're willing to sell it now.
Well,
the problem is everyone's long. Everyone's long.
Yeah.
And so right now we have enough power to meet our needs through 2018. So to buy power right now is only going to increase our costs with little if any benefit.
Yeah.
I might also add that last Thursday, the ARP did approve the FMPA short-term hedging program, which is a critical tool in trying to manage rate volatility. And so now we've got together this great toolbox that has hedging, both financial and physical. It has some market purchases. It has a rate stabilization fund. We've been able to accumulate a rate stabilization fund here, so we have a second line of defense to address rate volatility and, of course, trying to keep rates as low as possible. So we're doing the right things, and the direction of our rates are going the right direction right now.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I've spoken to Martha Barnwell. Martha tells us, you know, there's plenty of capacity out there. Whether FMPA will buy it from Progress, I don't know. But there's plenty of capacity.
Yeah, and I guess I meant back when the reason they had to build new capacity was because at that time they weren't going to sell it.
But there is now.
Yeah, we have. In fact, like I said, FMPA is long on resource through 2018.
Right.
So the buy capacity right now would simply be a squandering of money.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else have anything?
Okay. No, I just continue to move forward. And the moral of the story for me is I have extreme confidence in Matt and his leadership and keep moving and appreciate all the hard work.
Again, it's really not me. It's my team that deserves the credit. They are smarter than I am and more talented. They deserve the credit.
Better looking, too.
Well, you know, I agree. You know, we need to just continue on doing what we can do to try to fix this problem. But, you know, it seems like, you know, we're all we can do right now is putting Band-Aids on a problem that needs major surgery. So, anyway.
But we're getting there. It's baby steps, but they still add up. And we are 22% less than we were 2 years ago.
And oh, yeah. I mean, we're making progress. There's no question.
We just got to keep at it and be cognizant of the decisions we make today and the impacts they'll have on tomorrow and not overextend ourselves.
Okay. All right. Anybody else have anything? No, we're adjourned.
There's a few back there.
Okay, you got something for me to sign?
Yes, sir.